What's up, everybody? Rob Reese back at you. Another day in quarantine, another episode of NHL Fantasy on Ice, and major addition today. It's Keeper and Dynasty Leagues. I'm joined by Davey Sats, Waiver Wire James Harding, and Bobby Bender. What's up, fellas?
How you doing, James? Good to have you back.
Hey, it's great to be on with you guys. Robbie looking like he's sitting in the Clue library today with, but we all know that he would never commit the crime in the library because he spends way too much time there. So, you know, good on you for that, buddy.
Thank you. Shout out Zoom for the great green screen backgrounds, making a little bit of fun in this lockdown. But fellas, big episode today. We've been teasing it for a while. Let's kick it off with some general keeper dynasty drafting strategy. I just want to preface quickly by saying every keeper league has different rules, whether you're keeping guys on auction format, meaning you're paying a high price for the McDavids, Kucherovs, et cetera, or, you know, you're keeping five guys, which is, I think, is the standard Yahoo format right now if you joined one today. So, fellas, first three rounds, let's start with you, Davey. Who are you going after?
Well, this is interesting because obviously you want to get a guy like a Kucherov or a McDavid, but if you don't have one of those first five picks, he's not going to be there. There's also a great reason to go after a defenseman like Cale Makar or Quinn Hughes, who they're going to be great for the next 10 years. Or for me, if I had the 10th, 11th, 12th pick, I might go for a guy like Vasilevskiy. I mean, next 5 years, he's going to ring out 40 wins. So to me, if I don't have one of those first five picks to get a great forward, I'm going to go for a young defenseman or a stud goalie.
James, what do you got?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with Davey there more. I mean, when the primary thing that you want to do, especially in a new keeper league that you're just starting and you're just building your team, if you have one of those first five or six picks, you need to get the impact player. You need to get the impact scorer, the McDavid, the Draisaitl, the McKinnon, you know, a player like that. But outside of that that top five or six picks, you're really drafting, in my opinion, to build from the back out. Especially if you have the chance to get a young stud goaltender like a Vasilevskiy, a guy who's going to give you 30 to 40 wins a season. That's a guy you want to build around. And then in the second or third round, you target, you know, your winger, your forward, and then your defenseman. But outside those first, you know, six or seven picks, I would be looking at drafting a top goaltender because you can always get a stud center or winger right after that.
And I think this past season in fantasy solidifies that strategy, James, because we saw how few guys on the blue line were fantasy relevant. So let's say we go back in time 5 years ago, you've got Brent Burns on your keeper team. My money goes to you kept him every single year for the past 5 years. So that just highlights the importance of why you should take a Cale Makar or a Quinn Hughes in round one and not even think twice about it.
My question, Rob, is there an age limit that you target? Like, because if some guys are, you know, 25 or under, is that a good number? Or, like, obviously we're not going to draft a guy like Ovechkin super high because, hey, he's 30-something years old and he may only play for 2-3 seasons. Is there an age limit that you try to go for guys who are under a certain age?
Absolutely. I'm a 23 and under guy. I just like to do my due diligence in the first couple rounds and know that I've got these guys for the next 3 or 4 years. I want to have my core five guys locked up so I'm not making all these hard decisions come April whenever it resets in most years. So yeah, Davey, great question. I actually released my keeper ranks on NHL.com or updated them today for the top 100 players, 23 and under. Now, Pasta is a good example of a guy that's turning 23 in late May. Obviously, I'm going to bend the rules for a Pasternak. I'm going to bend the rules for a Draisaitl and for a McKinnon. But outside of those guys, I really do want to be a stickler and try and get the 23 and unders. What do you think about that, James?
I really think it comes down to need and it comes down to the player's situation right now. If a guy like a Makar is off the board and I have the option of somebody like a Kucherov would probably be gone, but if I have the option of somebody like maybe a John Tavares, around like the ninth or 10th pick. Obviously if a player like Austin Matthews is there, somebody like that, one of those established stars that's in their late 20s and right around the age of 30 and is easily a top 20 pick. If he's a guy that I know is going to produce at a very high level for about another 5 or 6 years, I'm definitely going to jump on that guy, depending on where the board is, though. Again, it depends on how you want to build your keeper team and if you feel like you're going to get value at that position.
And Davey, you're the goalie master. Everybody knows it. You've built a brand up. We're looking at a couple intriguing names now. Carter Hart is probably the first off the board in a lot of keeper leagues outside of Vasilevsky. So when you're looking at the next crop of guys, I think you've got to factor in Shesterkin now after what we saw with the Rangers in January, February, and now even maybe Sorokin coming over with that same kind of crop of hype. Where are you going to start taking those guys? Is it round two? Is it round three or four?
To me, the only three guys I would take in the first round would be Vasilevsky, Carter Hart, and probably Ilya Samsonov of Washington, just because of the team in front of him. We're assuming Holtby's going to be elsewhere next year, so that's going to be his team. Those are the three guys. I like their teams, and I like the way they're going to play. The rest of those guys you mentioned, I would say in the second round. But again, it's tough because we don't know what these teams are going to look like personally next year or in a couple of years from now. So I would only have one or two or three guys in the first round. We know the way goalies are. Look at Elvis Merzlikins, right? He came out of nowhere this year, and he's now you'd say, hey, he's a keeper on my team. So things can happen with goalies, which is why you might want to wait a couple rounds to get one, just because there's at least five or six that emerge every year. They might not be good for a dynasty, but they could help you for a year or two.
But Davey, with that, let me ask you a question. With a guy like Elvis, when would you reach for a guy? You know, we talk about, you know, we get an actual draft, you know, the NHL draft or even the NFL draft that happened last night. Everybody's saying, oh, you know, like they reached for that player. When it comes to the goaltender position, if there's a run on goalies, are you reaching for that goaltender for in a keeper league to try and fill in if you don't have anything and you kind of are pressed?
I would probably by the third round definitely want to have at least one goalie. I mean, this is a guy potentially can be your starter for four or five seasons. So definitely important to make sure you have one of those guys as it gets to rounds three or four. We know how there's a gluttony of center. You can always find them even if guys get hurt or guys aren't producing. But the thing for me, you look at people who did these kind of keeper drafts this year. Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko were going really high, and they were total busts in the season. So I'm wondering, Rob, like, where would you draft guys like Lafreniere, guys this who are going to be drafted in this year's draft? Do you, would there any of them you would take high, or would you be a little maybe hesitant because of what we've seen this year from a couple of highly touted rookies?
Well, you got to throw this year out the window, and I think, you know, the Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko letdowns, nobody. No analyst predicted that was going to happen for either of those players. Great situation walking in for both those guys. And, you know, if you're looking at Lafreniere, he is, for me, he's a top 10 pick in every keeper league. I don't care if he's wearing a Detroit Red Wings sweater, if he's wearing an Ottawa Senator sweater. I don't care about the situation, the coach, the arena, none of that. I'm taking Lafreniere top 10, and I am not thinking about the Kakko and the Hughes situation from 2019-20.
That's, I mean, I would probably agree with that. If you're a baseline keeper league, you know, starting fresh, he's definitely one of those guys. I would probably not take him in the top 10. Me personally, I would probably put him more in the second or third round, just depending on the situation that he lands in. If it's one of those leagues where it's an established league and you have, you know, those five rounds of keepers already, that's obviously going to change things if you already have a guy like a McKinnon or a McDavid or one of those big stars where, you know, you are guaranteed to have that person so you can swing big on a guy like Alexis in the first round there. But I would agree with that. But in a baseline starting fresh keeper league, I probably wouldn't go with him until about the second or third round. But he's probably the only player in this draft class this year that I would take inside maybe the first 80 to 100 picks. I'm not really high on a guy like Quentin Byfield just yet. And Tim Stolze from the German league, who's the top European skater, I have to see more from him because every year that he's progressed and faced tougher competition, his stats have gone down. I think that he can definitely be a solid player, but I'm not investing a top 80 or 100 pick in either of those two guys outside of Lafreniere.
Now, Rob, you mentioned before about defense and a guy like Burns, Carlson. These aren't guys you're going to be targeting. We know Hughes and McCarr, but I'm just wondering, who do you think would be the next tier of defensemen, those young guys that you would take? Because let's face it, these two guys are probably going to be one of the first five or 10 picks gone among defensemen.
They should be. They absolutely should be in most leagues. If they're not, the tier below that, I would start with Rasmus Dahlin. I know everybody, especially on Twitter, you know, when they ask me about Dahlin and keeper rankings, they always say, dot, 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 but Sabres. And I know, I hear you. The team's not good, but I do believe in the Sabres long term. I think they'll get it going. So he would lead the second tier. And then just a little bit below the Dahlins, I would look at Thomas Chabot for the Senators. I would look at Heiskanen for Dallas. And a big time name I think has a lot of intrigue right now is Philip Roenick with the Detroit Red Wings. My logic there is, number one, he produced well in his rookie season for Detroit. And number two, if they do win the Lafreniere sweepstakes, that power play with Zadina, with Larkin, Lafreniere, Roenick, I mean, that's going to be a very productive power play if the cards align there.
I would probably say Chabot would take a huge jump up those rankings for you. Maybe even, would you say Chabot could jump Dahlin if they get Lafreniere?
Absolutely. Look at what Chabot did, not this season, but the previous one, when they had the Mark Stones there. Duchesne was there for most of the season. That power play was pretty dynamic, and Chabot was scoring too. He has a lethal shot from the point. Not as many goals this year, I think, just because they lost those scoring threats and those release shooters on the power play, but Brady Tkachuk is proving that he's probably going to be maybe the best Tkachuk in the whole family and the NHL lineage there. So I like what the Senators are doing, James. And if they get Lafreniere, yeah, Thomas Chabot, you better consider him within the top 10 or top 15 at worst.
Now, here's a question that I'm just wondering, because it's obviously different than a regular league. Would you maybe try to stack some guys, or is that really out of the question because this is the league where a guy could get traded, hurt, or, you know, signed somewhere else? Or is that something you'd even consider with some of these guys?
I definitely would, depending on the situation, more so not necessarily the team situation, their contract situation. You know, if it's young guys, like, you know, take the Senators, for example, if you have, you know, Brady Tkachuk and you have the, you know, obviously if you're in an established keeper league, you probably aren't going to have Tkachuk and Chabot. But if you're starting out and you have the opportunity to grab, you know, Tkachuk and Chabot, or Chabot and Lafreniere, if they win the draft lottery and end up taking him, you can stack young guys who are going to be under team control for the next like 7 or 8 years. Absolutely. I'm jumping on that 100%. But if you have a young guy and then a more established player who is, you know, a year or two from free agency, I would be a little bit, you know, more hesitant about that. It just depends also who the players are. You know, if you know that guy who's a year or two from free agency has standalone value no matter where he plays, then absolutely I'm jumping on that. But it just depends on the dynamic of where you think both of them are going to fall. You know, I had Artemi Panarin in one of my keeper leagues. I drafted Kaapo Kakko last year, and that absolutely flopped. I ended up dropping Kaapo midway through the season because he wasn't producing and they weren't playing together. So, you know, the best laid plans don't always work out. But for sure, I would definitely say there is a situation in place where I would stack, you know, two or three guys from the same roster if I know that they're going to be together for a long time and they're all going to be productive.
I'm intrigued by it, guys. I think it's definitely, when you look at potential hypothetical stacks, the top two in my book, the top two combos would be Svechnikov, Aho, and Pedersen, Hughes for the Canucks. So, you know, when you look at those names, I'd say, yeah, sign me up for that any day. Granted, James brought up a good point. It doesn't always work out. And then the thing you have to think about is, sober up come April, when you're clicking keep on two Vancouver names, that's a harder pill to swallow for whatever reason, because you know you're locked into their schedule. You know you're locked in. If Pedersen gets injured, Hughes' production goes down. If Svechnikov gets hurt, Aho's production might go down. So you're kind of signing up for that boom or bust package. However, you know, if you are looking at Hughes, Pedersen, if you are looking at Aho, Svechnikov, I think it'd be very hard to pass on those guys.
We know that guys like Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, they're not going to be drafted in the first round, but they are going to be drafted because they still have at least a few good years left. So where do those guys kind of fit in? Where would you expect or reach for them?
I would probably start taking guys like that in the second round, depending on who it is. A guy like Ovechkin or Crosby definitely would be a second rounder, but again, in that you know, bare bones stock just starting out keeper league, you really have to establish, you know, the younger players, and that's the situation where you reach for the younger player with potential over the established star who's over the age of 30. But I would definitely say, you know, mid to late second round, because you know, no matter what, for, you know, 4 or 5 years, you're going to get a pretty decent level of production from those guys, especially if you think it's a keeper league that's going to be together for, you know, 8, 10 or more years, where you know, the first part of that, you're going to get elite level production from those guys, and the younger guys that you have on your keeper roster are going to be developing.
For me, it's round three. I want to get my Hughes or McCarr round one, my Carter Hart or a high-end forward like Aho, Matthew Tkachuk, round two. And then round three, I'm looking at those guys to complement the roster, whether it's Sid the Kid, even a guy like Stamkos, who I know has been a little bit banged up, but just a surefire production guy where you're looking at around 35 goals, 60-plus assists. Like, you can't go wrong with that production. Even at the age, if you know they're expendable after a season or two, fine. I mean, for a keeper league, it's all about building for the future. And chances are, to compete that first year in your keeper league, you're going to need those industry stalwarts.
I would probably say the third round also, and I'm just thinking about this logically. If there's a guy like Patrick Kane that's available in the third round, for the next 4 seasons, he's probably going to score at least 80 points for 4 seasons. And if you pick a guy in the third round who isn't established yet, those seasons from Kane could be better than this guy is going to produce in 10 seasons. So I agree, third round is probably where I'd say an established star who's in his, you know, late 20s, early 30s. I know I'm going to get 3 or 4 good seasons out of him. I'd bank that.
Let me pose that same question with a goalie, an aging goalie. Let's say Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, is a great example of this. Now he's got Robin Lehner breathing down his neck. By the way, I was looking at Lehner's stats yesterday. This guy has to be the best goalie stat-wise in the NHL the past 2 seasons, considering what he did last year without much scoring help from the Islanders. And then this season, with Chicago to start the season, their defense is horrible. Now he's with the Knights. I think he's going to be incredible, go on a deep playoff run if things shake out here and resume. But when I look at a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury, who was kind of an industry name in fantasy for years, that's where I start to kind of get a little bit murky. If you take him in like round 8 or 9 of a keeper league and he gets outplayed by Lehner next year, you might only get 20, 25 games from Fleury. What do you guys think about players like that?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, he's 35 years old. He only has 2 years left on his contract right now. He could be one of those guys where even after, you know, potentially this season, if Lehner outperforms him, you could maybe see Vegas look into some kind of a buyout when they come back from this break. You know, whatever the league and the Players Association are able to negotiate, maybe some kind of a window for compliance buyouts. You know, do you really want to invest $4 or $5 million to keep Lehner and have $7 million tied up in Fleury? So I think it just depends on the situation. For a guy like Fleury, who is 35 now, going to be 36 at some point in next season, and only has a year or 2 years right now left on his contract once next season begins. You know, he's a free agent in 2 years. So I would definitely say that it just depends on the situation. A guy like Fleury, with his age and his contract situation and the fact that there's another established starter that they brought in who could outplay him, that's definitely going to kill his value, probably somewhere in like the 8th or 10th round in the keeper league. You probably would even see some players, if they re-sign Lehner, take Lehner above Fleury just for the long term, thinking that eventually the job is going to be his.
I think I would stay away from Fleury for those reasons that you mentioned: the age, the uncertainty, the 2 years on the contract. I mean, we've seen so much turnover in goalies. You'll be able to find one. There's no need to get a guy like that in that round. You know, in the last round, just take a flyer on someone, and if he ends up, you know, winning the job for a season or two, then you've done great with the draft pick. But a guy like Fleury, as you mentioned, what's his upside really for you, for your team, if you draft him? It's really, there's other guys you should go after, I think.
And yeah, keeper leagues, it's so important to get workhorse guys. If you are drafting a goalie in later rounds, I don't care if it's on kind of a fringe team or even a team right below playoff contention, as long as you know that goalie is starting a big bulk of games, you're much better off at least getting the stats every week and the minimum starts versus having that maybe one appearance per week and who knows how well it's going to be. And a team I think that you're looking at there is now the Blue Jackets, who just signed Korpisalo and Elvis Merzlikins to deals. Now, the money, James, suggests that Merzlikins is coming in at $4 million. He's probably going to be their number one guy. Where are you looking to draft Elvis now? Is it top 20, top 30 in keeper leagues despite team concerns?
I think it just depends on how the board sets up right now. When you see what he did this season, you know, at the beginning, he definitely looked a little out of place. And then he just, around middle of the season, when Korpisalo went down, and they turned to him and they said, "You can't leave the building right now, Elvis. You got to stay." He jumped up and he performed outstanding. You know, 13-9-8, 235 goals against, 923 save percentage. So, you know, he stepped up in a big way and he definitely put himself on the fantasy radar. I just think it depends on where goaltender is for you and what the board is stacking up like. But, you know, he's a young guy. He's not that young. He's 26 years old, so he came over late, but he's younger than some of the more established starters that are going to be out there. In a standard league, I would probably be taking over a guy like him. But for sure, it seems like with the contract, he's going to be able to get his opportunities. And I think that because of that, I would definitely be targeting him around like the third or fourth round. But again, it depends on who's on the board and where you are right now. You could even maybe try and go him and another top goaltender in the first three or four rounds to solidify that aspect if you think that you're going to be able to get production offensively in the later rounds. So I would probably target him third or fourth round for sure right now.
We know I've been a fan of Elvis since the preseason. I've loved this guy. I said he's going to do great things. He has. To me, I'm throwing the money out the window. I think they each signed two-year deals. I think we could see a split between these two guys. I mean, Korpisalo was the guy first, then it was Elvis. They both played really well. So this might be a true timeshare, at least for next season. And this might seem like a weird strategy, but I might try to get both of those guys if I were able to draft them both, because for the next two seasons, while they're locked up, it could be a timeshare.
Davey, I agree wholeheartedly. It does seem like you've changed your tune on Elvis a little bit starting around February. I would say you kind of got sour on him for whatever reason. I don't blame you. But
what was his record? Remind us of how I said to drop him and he lost six in a row. So
you were right on the money, man. You were locked in better than anybody this season. I have to tip my cap to you. You really were locked in.
As you're saying, I mean, these guys could be a timeshare for the next year or two. So I would have to say, if you're getting one of those guys, try to get the other.
Now, outside the obvious stuff here, boys, let's talk some contrarian strategies. And I think a player that is on a lot of guys' radar, but I don't think anyone's going to have the guts to draft him top 100, is Kaprizov, who is a Minnesota Wild player. He's playing in the KHL, though. I think he's coming over next year. I've got Cappy ranked 16th overall for U23 players. Would I be crazy to select him in like round 4 or 5?
I mean, with the way that the Wild have looked this season, and especially with the emergence of Kevin Fiala there actually looking like the player that we thought Kevin Fiala would be in Nashville, I don't think that it's too much of a reach. I probably, a guy like that, would have had him pegged around like the sixth or seventh round. I think it just depends on the situation, but the production is definitely there. 230 points in 293 career games in the KHL. At 62 points in 57 games over there this season, 33 goals. So, you know, he definitely has that scoring touch. He profiles as a top six winger in the NHL on any team. I think that if you put him on that roster with a guy like Kevin Fiala, there's definitely the opportunity for a lot of production there. It just depends on the center. You know, that's kind of something that we've always said about the Wild for the last like 5 or 6 years is their center depth just isn't there as much as they need to for the production. You know, so if you put him on a line with a guy like Fiala or even a guy like Zach Parise, who's, you know, even still in mid-30s in age, a 30-goal-a-year guy, I definitely think that the production would be there to warrant taking a guy like Kaprizov around like the rounds 5 through 7 in a keeper league.
See, to me, I'm kind of worried about these KHL guys. I mean, we saw with Gusev, right? He was the MVP of the KHL. I know he played with the Devils, but he had an underwhelming year as far as I'm concerned. And I can't remember now the guy who the Golden Knights took, right? He was
Nadim Shipachev.
Yes, there you go, right? He was supposed to be the next coming great thing, and what happened to him? So to me, I wouldn't draft him that high just because of the uncertainty. And as I said, there's a different thing when guys come over from the KHL if they haven't played in the NHL before. Just seems like the numbers obviously aren't going to be as good. It's going to be an adjustment. So I wouldn't be as high on him, Rob, as you are personally right now.
So the only reason I am high on him, and I think I have to concede that's a great point. I mean, some of these guys come over and it takes them a season or two to adjust. There's no doubt about that. I will read the stat, though. Only drafted forwards in the last 30 years to record an NHL equivalent of 70 or more KHL points before age 22. Pavel Bure, Evgeny Malkin, Vlad Tarasenko, Evgeny Kuznetsov, and Kirill Kaprizov did it twice before his 21st birthday, now up to 4 times doing that before age 23. So even if there is an adjustment year, what is that adjustment year going to be? 50 points for that player? I'm all in on Kaprizov.
That's a great point. I mean, I wouldn't take him as high as you are, but the numbers suggest that, hey, maybe he is going to be one of these elite guys, but I would just be hesitant because of how we've seen some of these guys transition.
I wouldn't necessarily be hesitant about the transition. I would be hesitant about the situation. Going to Minnesota, I mean, like I was saying before, we've never really looked at Minnesota as being, the last, 5-10 years, a hotbed for fantasy production offensively. Now things seem to be shifting a little bit there. They still have some established players in place, but I would definitely say that, the production that he's put up over there in the KHL would warrant me definitely putting him just because of the age. And now the fact that Minnesota looks like it has some younger established players starting to produce, I would be a little bit more high on him than had you told me that, 2 or 3 years ago.
Now I've got a question here from Twitter, Kako Hughes, where to draft in a keeper league. Obviously we're all aware of the letdown from last season, but we all know, too, in fantasy, short memory usually reigns king. So, boys, where are we taking them?
I'm definitely taking Hughes before I'm taking Kako. I would say that just it seems like he's going to get more of an opportunity for production and to be put, in a position to succeed right now with Kapo. I mean, everybody thought that he was going to slot into the Rangers' top six right away and play somewhere along the line with Zibanejad and Panarin, and he just hasn't. And he has spent 95% of the season so far outside of the Rangers' top six, so you really can't get a good judge on what kind of production level that you can expect from him going forward until you really see him put with players in a position to succeed. And the Devils right now are all in on going to be putting players around Jack Hughes to try and get the most out of him as they can. So I'm definitely more high on Hughes. I probably would, with the way that things, shook out this season, be looking somewhere around like the 5th or 6th round for a guy like him. And with Kapo somewhere maybe between rounds 8 and 10 right now. I just can't trust it enough to invest a top 5 round pick in a guy that I don't even know if he's going to be in the league in the next, 3 to 5 years.
Well, Rob, I know you have both of these guys in the first round, which I think is where they'll get drafted, but I don't think they'd slip to the 5th round, but I think because of what happened, they could very well drop to 3 or something. As you mentioned, it's a learning curve. It was the first season for both of these guys, but I'd expect them to have better seasons. But I don't know if, for me, I would take them in the first round because I don't know how they're going to do next season, next 2 seasons. And some of these other guys, like you said, Tkachuk, a Pedersen, I would rather have that as my first round selection.
I'm with you. And the thing, I've got them both outside the top 15 now on the U23 list, which, might be too low for people, might be too high for others. But, I think for Jack Hughes, he at least had the excuse, hey, I have to play two ways. I've got to play against big time centers. For Kako, I mean, play on that Rangers offense. There's really no reason not to succeed. You don't have to necessarily play two ways, even though Coach Quinn wanted him to. Maybe that's what held him back to that learning curve. So I'm with you, James. I would prefer to take Hughes, But I think Kako, man, if you can get him in the fourth or fifth round, I know how much of a letdown he was, but that Rangers team next year, there's no reason they shouldn't have a top five power play.
But what if he's not on that top five power play, or what if he's not playing in that top six again, and he's stuck playing with, you know, Brendan Lemieux and whoever they put him on the third line with?
Well, that would be a darn shame, James. But I'm gonna mortgage the house on that one. There's no way MSG is gonna be very happy, whether there are fans there or there are not fans there, if Kako is sitting on the bench for power play one next season.
Larry David wouldn't be happy. I mean, that guy, right? If he wants him on the first line, get him on the first line.
I don't even care about the even strength thing. If he's potting 15 power play goals, 20 power play goals with Zibanejad and Panarin, that's all I need. And Tony DeAngelo now, who's, by the way, a great keeper target for anybody looking for like a defenseman outside the first couple rounds. But one more question here before we wrap up. Just on anybody, I've gotten this a couple times, anybody looking to get into a keeper league or intrigued by keeper leagues now after this episode, what is a good general format to start with? I've seen people, this is from a Twitter follower, asking me, I've seen people say three keepers per team, each player can be kept for 3 years after they become free agents. Do you guys have a preference on maybe starting a keeper league with rules like that?
I mean, I think personally, if you're going to be in a keeper league, 3 years to me seems like nothing. I mean, I would want a guy for at least five. And if it's a keeper league, I want more than three of my players, maybe not half the team. But to me, this seems like in football and baseball, I'm in a couple of keeper leagues, and you get to keep three guys for like three seasons. If I were doing one for hockey, I'd want like at least five guys and to have them for – you were able to keep them for like five seasons or so.
Yeah, and I also think it depends on the roster size. You know, like you said, Davey, you don't want to keep, you know, half the roster. It depends on the league size too, how many teams are in the league that you're in. If it's, you know, an 8 to a 10 team league, obviously there's going to be a lot of turnover. So a league like that, you're probably going to have less keepers per roster. And then obviously if it's a team like a 12 to a 16 team league, you might have, you know, five or six so that you can kind of establish a base. But 3 years definitely seems like too short of a period of time, especially if it's a league that you think you're going to be able to sustain for a long period of time. So I would definitely say if it's anything 10 teams or above, five keepers and a minimum of 5 years.
And my preferred format is five keepers, which is four skaters and a minimum of one goalie, or only one goalie, and then five-year length to keep the players. Like Davey said, I mean, even if you get hosed in the draft, you got to draft better. There's no excuse. I mean, we provide so much content for you guys. We answer everybody's question on Twitter. There is no reason in this day and age, unless you miss the draft, like Davey and I did this past season, but we're still in the playoffs.
So there's made the playoffs. So
right. There is no excuse to not at least draft well. And if you don't draft well, you can recover on the waiver wire in the first 2 weeks of the season. We're going to break it all down for you guys, but I would highly recommend get keeper leagues going. Let's bring these things back. Let's get it popular. And then we can make this maybe a monthly segment here on NHL Fantasy on Ice.
You said it, Rob. That's it. That's all that needs to be said. We covered it all.
Yeah, keeper leagues are fun, guys. I'm telling you right now, especially if you get a good group of guys, you can keep it together for a while. The one thing is trading in a keeper league is just, you know, especially if you're in there with a bunch of guys who know what they're doing, you definitely have to pay more of a premium because – you know, it's one thing if you're in a season-long league that ends at the end of the year and you're trading with a guy who's out of it, you know, to try and get an established star to make a playoff run. All of a sudden, it's like you send a guy in the keeper league a trade, and he's sitting there, and he's just like, why is he sending me a trade for this guy when I know that he's not really performing well? What does he know? So if he wants this guy, then he's going to have to double what he just sent me in order for me to give him that. You know, so there's definitely a give and take when it comes to trading in keeper leagues, but there's so much fun.
Well, take it from a guy whose keeper league team name is Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, James Harding. You can find him on Twitter at jharding_hockey. Davey is available at David Satriano. I'm at NHL Reese, and Bobby B is at Air Checked. So long, and take it easy, boys.